I can get this guy to laugh no matter what time of day it is. All right, look, we are looking for the 10th caller right now at 412-922-1020 to win that incredible $25 gift certificate to Sorgel, so the 10th caller wins it. But Doug would like to take all of your gardening questions as the weather is going to warm up beginning tomorrow, that solar eclipse day. So, hey, 866-391-1020 will get you all of the gardening questions answered you need. Plus, it's Luke Warner in a little bit, Davey Tree Talking Tree. But right now, the star of the show, Doug Oster, DougOster.com, your organic gardener. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning. And John, hang in there. I'm going to get to your call before we break here. I've got a lot to talk about, though. We do have Luke Warner coming up a little later. He's going to talk all about spring lawn care. So if you have lawn questions, wait till 7:30, but we'll answer them then. And then 7:15 today, my guest is Bill Dorn from the Pittsburgh Rose Society. He's going to tell us all about what we should be doing with our roses, some of his favorites. You know, Bill has, he grows 120 different roses in the city of Pittsburgh. And I wanted to start off just talking about something I posted on Facebook, the beautiful and fleeting moments in the garden and why they are so important to us. And it begins with snowdrops, one of the first things to bloom. And these are just all things that are only here for a short time, but it's so important. You know, I wait, or we wait all year for these things. And what's happening right now in my garden, the snowdrops, the flowers are gone, but they've got little seed heads on them and they're dropping their seeds to make more snowdrops. But the crab apple, I wait all year long to see it. It's just the buds. Because the buds have this deep rose purple color. When they open, it's a brighter pink, which is beautiful. You know, this tree was there when we moved in, and you can see it out from the kitchen window. And, you know, for 25 years, we've been seeing that thing bloom. Well, years ago, a big pine tree fell on the thing, and it was Davy Tree, actually, that came. And they wanted to, you know, just like, okay, what are we going to do with this tree? And I'm like, I'd really, really hope that you could save it. And he was like, it's not going to look right, you know, but let's do a cut here. Let's do a cut there. And now, 10 years later, it does look okay. It looks it looks odd, but it looks okay. And I get my crabapple buds. And again, they're only there for like a week. Then they open the flowers, stay for a couple weeks, and then that's it for a crabapple. But I have these double hellebores with white flowers, and now they, as they're at the end of their bloom time, they're fading to a nearly purple, and it's just so beautiful. And of course, the daffodils. This has been an incredible daffodil season because it stayed cool. It was very early daffodil season, but my mid-season and late season are just coming in now, and because of this cool weather, we've had a great daffodil season. And speaking of daffodils, you should go down to Northern Washington County to Joe Ham's Daffodil Garden. It is the greatest collection of blooming daffodils, certainly in our area, that I've ever seen. And I actually talked to Joe yesterday, and he's going to be scaling back. You know, he's in his 80s. So this is the year to go down there and see it, and it is in its peak right now. All that information is on DougOster.com, how to get down there, how to give him a call. And you should just go down there, you know. Great pictures, too. Great place to take pictures of kids. Now, next Sunday is the first of my new free three-part series called Seed From Seed to Supper, a vegetable garden workshop series, part one at Bedner's Farm and Greenhouse next Sunday, 1 p.m. We'll be talking all about starting seeds, soil preparation, early planting, much more. There's two more classes later in the year. You come to all three, you get a special gift. So next Sunday, Bedner's Farm and Greenhouse, 1 o'clock. I can't wait. And my tomato seeds are up, but there's still time to start your seeds. Again, I've got all that information at DougOster.com. Let's talk to Joe about his fig tree.
All right. Hey, Joe.
Oh, John. It's John. John, I'm sorry.
You've been here 8 minutes and already.
I've been here 8 minutes and I can't get the difference between Joe and John because I can't see the names from here.
That's why you should leave it to me because
okay.
I'm closer
You're
to the screen.
You're the expert.
Okay, let's go to Tim. I mean, John on line one. How you doing, John? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Harry. Hey,
well done.
Good, 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 good.
Hey, listen, Chicago Fig, I know I'm anxious, but I'd like to get it out. You think it harms it if I expose it from all the cover that I have on it.
No.
And watch for on cold, frosty nights to keep it covered.
You'll be fine. Now, when we had our friend Steve Biggs on from Toronto, he's the fig whisperer. This time of the year is what he calls the fig dance. And so you're uncovering it, and then you're covering it again.
Yes.
At this point with the with the Chicago Hardy, was it buried or what was it covered with? What kind of...
Laid it down and covered it with, per your directions, with the straw and mulch, bags of mulch, about 7 bags. And, it looked like it's doing pretty good when I peeked at it, with just prune it in February. Now I'm anxious. I want to get it out because I know it grows like a weed.
Yeah, the thing is, though, you just got to be sure that foliage is not going to have frost. We'll probably have frost, and you never can tell. We could go, we could be frost-free from, like, April 20th, or we could get frost on May 20th or even later. And so that's the concern. You don't have to have it covered up as much. Like, when Steve was talking about his fig dance, he's talking about a container in the garage that he pulls out when it's nice and puts it back. You're doing the same thing. But you're going to have a way. It's going to have to stay flat. You might be able to get those bags off there, but you would want some kind of cover on there, some kind of tarp or something that you could throw over there that's going to protect it. You shouldn't be so anxious,
Well, I know. What I'm thinking is more of one of these bags with a drawstring on. You can the thing is only about, I'm going to say, 2 feet high. It's just a new tree. So I'll be able to wrap a bag with a drawstring on and pull it tight.
Yeah, as long as you can keep that foliage from getting the frost, you'll be fine. And you might get a jump on the season, and you might have some figs on there really early. Sometimes what a fig will do, especially coming out of a mild winter like this, and I'm hoping mine does this, is it will put on this early crop of figs called breba crop, it's called.
Oh.
And it might come out of dormancy with figs on it, which means you'd be harvesting a first crop of figs in July, and then it'll put on a second crop, which is that later crop that we're always waiting for in October, hoping that it will, that they'll ripen. How long have you had the fig bush tree?
I had put it in the ground last year for the first time. It did extremely well. Pruned it to try and shape it a little bit in February. I'm amazed at how it grows. It just grows like a weed, really.
I do that pruning at the very end of the season. I wouldn't do it in February because that's when it might be thinking about putting on those figs.
I
would do that right as I'm putting it to sleep. I would do whatever pruning needs to be done right then.
Late fall, very, very late.
Okay. Yeah, right when it drops its leaves and it's done. October, this year it would have been, sometime in October where it got cold and the thing dropped its leaves. The stems and branches, they can take a lot more cold than the foliage. And so that's why there's really no hurry to put it to bed. Did you have a specific reason? Did we talk about this before? A specific reason you wanted to grow figs?
You piqued my interest a couple of years ago. You talked about your Chicago figs and how impressed you were with yours. Not necessarily if you have a Chicago, but I love figs. I just love fresh figs. Can't stand dried ones, but love fresh ones.
That's interesting because as I've done my traveling trips, I've run into places that had fresh figs. People don't know about fresh figs, John. They're very suspect of them. I've tried. Like I'll buy a big thing of figs and try and give them to my travelers, and people won't eat them. They're not interested, but they don't know what they're missing, right?
Taste them one time. I don't know how you stop eating them.
Yeah, I agree. All right, good luck with that tree. Keep us posted. I'd like to hear how things go here early in the spring. And if it does come out of dormancy with that fig on there. That would be awesome.
866-391-1020. More of your calls are welcome. Plus, Luke Warner, Davey Tree Talking Tree within 20 minutes. The Organic Gardener continues on KDK in just a few. Before we get to Tree Turf and Luke Warner, Davey Tree Talking Tree, special guest waiting in the wings. Here's the host of The Organic Gardener to do the introduction, Doug Oster.
So glad to welcome Bill Dorn to the show. He's the director of the American Rose Society for Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware. He's also the president of the Pittsburgh Rose Society. Bill is a consulting rosarian and a horticulture judge certified by the American Rose Society. And he grows, as I said earlier in the show, 120 roses in his personal garden in the city of Pittsburgh. Bill, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Doug. The sun is out this morning.
It's so unusual to see, isn't it?
Absolutely. I love it.
Hey, what got you started with roses?
Well, when I was a kid, my parents grew them, and I was more interested in playing with the Japanese beetles than roses. But then about 30 years ago, I decided to try my hand at it, and I made lots and lots and lots of mistakes. So I have come to learn that we learn most from our mistakes than from our successes. So seriously, about 10 years ago, I started to gradually add roses to the garden. And as we say, I got the rose bug. And there's always something new that I'm planting every season.
120 roses. How much space do you have?
I have a basic city lot. I think it's like 50 by 130. And most of the backyard is dedicated to the roses. So I have more an architectural style roses where I have actually seven different gardens that are dedicated to particular friends, one for my parents, and it's manageable for me.
So let's talk about pruning. I don't know anything about rose pruning. Does every rose need to be pruned in the spring?
Pretty much, yes. You know, it's a question that I get all the time. And so I spent a lot of time trying to make it a simple process because people can sometimes get overwhelmed by the idea. Mm-hmm. And so there are two times in every year that we prune, and that the first is the spring and the second is in the fall. I'll take care of the easy one. The fall pruning is quite simple. After we see the first froths, we go out into the garden, we get our pruning shears, and we simply cut down any tall roses to about waist high. And the purpose of this is if the canes are real long, the winter winds are going to rock it and actually could technically uproot the bush. Mm. So that's a real simple one. The more involved pruning is in the spring, and right now we are in the in pruning time, and Mother Nature always tells us when to prune after we see the yellow forsythia bloom out in gardens or out in public. And I've kind of tried to make it simple for us, and if your listeners could remember the letter D, and so I have called this the six D's of pruning. So each of the canes that need to be pruned away begin with the letter D. So the very first one is you want to prune away anything that is dead. And it looks dark brown, perhaps black, and that's a normal part of any rose bush. Technically, it's called desiccation. And that's because of the winter winds and the temperatures. So you simply want to prune them down until you get what's called healthy pith, P-I-T-H. And that means that there's still material in that cane that can produce growth. The next D is I call dinky. Now, the word means small and unimpressive. And so you want to prune away any cane that is about the width or less of a pencil. And the whole purpose of that is that a cane that small will not really support a bloom. So you can take away all the small stuff. The third one is called disease. Now, you know, there's lots of fungal bacterial diseases in roses, and the big culprit is called black spot. And black spot not only gets on the leaves, but it also can get on the canes. So you want to look for anything that is unusual in terms of the basic green color, and you want to prune that down as far as you need to go. The next one, the fourth one, is called damaged. Now, during the winter, you know, because of the wind and maybe even critters that come through the garden, you know, some of the canes will be broken or, in fact, maybe creased or bent over. They're not going to sustain a life in the spring. So anything that's damaged, you want to cut that away. The fifth one is called diagonal. And, you know, the word diagonal, two lines that cross over one another. Well, when you see two canes that are growing across one another and they're touching, that can be a problem because as the rosebush grows, they can rub. And that friction can actually cause a breakdown in the upper layer of the cane. So you want to prune those away. And then the final one is one that probably is the most confusing for people. I call it directional. When a rosebush grows, it starts to produce bud eyes, and that's where the new cane will come that will eventually support a rose. You want to look for canes where there is an outside bud eye. So the bud eye is pointing away from the center of the bush, and you want to prune about a quarter of an inch above that. In doing that, what you're naturally going to do is shape your rosebush, and the natural shape of a rosebush is in the shape of a vase. So when you prune above that outward facing bud eye, you keep the center of the rose bush very open. And that's what we want. Roses love lots of air, lots of circulation. So the six D's of pruning, and an easy way that I teach people is if you simply open up your hand with your fingers pointed upwards, you'll see that there are five fingers and an open center in your palm. That's what you eventually want to have your rose bush look like. A lot of people are afraid to prune roses because they think the roses are going to cry or they're going to complain. Actually, roses love to be pruned. When I was a child, next door neighbor grew some roses, and every spring she became upset at her husband because her husband went out and started to mow the lawn, and whether he accidentally did it or he did it on purpose, he ran over her rose bushes with the lawnmower. So that means that they were all cut right to the ground. Well, guess what? She had the most beautiful roses in the whole neighborhood. So it's very difficult to over prune a rose. So when you're done pruning, the cane should be about anywhere from maybe 8 to 16 inches high. And you might end up having about, you know, five or six canes. It looks like you killed it, but you really didn't. Because what pruning does to a rose bush is that it stimulates the beginning of a chemical communication system within itself, all the starches and the sugars. And once the soil warms up to about 45 degrees, then we're good to go. And all of a sudden, out from these canes will produce bud eyes, and you will have absolutely beautiful roses.
Bill, we're already out of time. I'm going to have you back on the show to tell us more about roses, but thank you so much for you taught me how to prune roses, and I so much appreciate it. And we will have you back on the show soon.
All right, good stuff. We'll take a break, get to the news. And then it's Luke Warner, Tree Turf, Davy Tree, Talking Tree on KDKA.
It's Luke Warner, my friend from Davy Tree, and we're going to talk all about the lawn today. But Luke and I are going to be part of a television show again this season, our third season of In Doug's Garden. And Luke has been part of it. We've had a lot of fun doing that, right, Luke?
Looking forward to doing it again with you.
So is it too early to be talking about the lawn, or should we be out there working on it?
No, it's about that time. I was just thinking about getting my tractor ready for springtime here. So it's here.
So what's the first thing that comes to mind when you're thinking about, okay, getting that tractor ready? What does that mean?
Yeah, a little bit of like mower maintenance, just to make sure that, that your blades are sharp. Maybe they need replaced. Maybe they need sharpened. Getting your tractor ready. But if you're going to look into some turf maintenance or lawn maintenance for the coming year, it's always really good to start with a soil test. So you know if you are going to be putting any products down, that you're actually putting down what your turf needs and not just kind of guessing and you know, throwing stuff at the wall to see what really sticks.
Is it the Penn State Cooperative Extension test, or is it a different kind of soil test that we want for the lawn?
No, the stuff with the extension is totally fine and good to do. I believe that's still free for Pennsylvania residents. I could be wrong.
$10. But... It's $10 now.
Okay. So still very much a great investment, you know, really worth your time to do that and to figure out if, you know, your macronutrients are in order, which are your NPK, your nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. It also gives you a look at soil pH, what your organic matter percentage is. But a lot of those basic things to make sure you're doing the right stuff for your lawn.
And when do we start seeding? If we need to do a little seeding to help the lawn out where we've had some trouble during the winter, is it too early to put seed down?
No, it's not. I would prefer to do your seeding in the fall.
Right.
That's always the best. As those temperatures drop in the fall, the weeds aren't as strong and the turf is stronger. So that's the best time to get that seed establishment when it can outcompete the weeds. You get it tough. So when you go into springtime, you know, right now you have some bare spots and you might be seeing some weeds pop up. It's slower for the grass to establish now than the weeds. So the weeds kind of have a little bit of a head start. So there's a little bit of management that goes into getting that seed established. But you can seed now and getting those bare spots seeded will give you that cover growing into the year.
Well, Luke, I have what they call a quilted lawn with many different species. I enjoy my wild violets, and as long as they end up being green at the end, that's fine for me. But not everybody can have a lawn like that. You know, some neighborhoods, some areas, the culture is all around having that perfect lawn without any other species in there. Talk a little bit about weed control.
Yeah, so there are different options. It really depends on what type of weeds you have that determines the best way to manage them. Everybody thinks of crabgrass, and that's, you know, a big bad one, or dandelions. Those are best controlled with pre-emergence, put down in the early spring. So, you know, getting ahead of those ones, putting down something that won't let those seeds germinate is the best and most effective way to control them. But then on the other hand, right now, a lot of people might be seeing some small white flowers in their lawn. That's a weed called hairy bittercress. And, you know,
Getting lots of questions about hairy bittercress.
Yeah. And the easiest way to you know, control that is, knock it down before it goes to seed. So mowing your grass and just knocking that off, it's a winter annual. So you mow your grass and it's pretty much going to be gone. That's the easiest way to control it versus trying to throw a bunch of money at, you know, some weed control at it. Sometimes those options of, you know, just grabbing things before it goes to seed, you don't have to mow it. If you just have a little bit, you can certainly pull it, and if it's before it goes to seed, you can throw it in your compost pile.
You know, there is a cool pre-emergent that's organic called corn gluten meal, but it has to be put on right now. And it stops any seeds from completing the germination process, and it's safe. So that's just one option. When we do start mowing the lawn, how tall should it be?
Depends what time of year it is. This time of year, you want to, you know, your first mow of the year, you should get it a little bit lower than you're normally used to. So you do have to move that mower deck. Sometimes when you can have some fungal issues in the early spring. So if possible, if you can collect those first couple mowings, if there's any fungal issues going on in the lawn, that can help mitigate that. But as the season goes on, you need to mow at that, you know, 3-4+ inch mark. So that is a good recommendation as the turf's actively growing. If you don't have, you know, if you don't want to walk around your yard with a ruler or a tape measure, you know, a credit card works great. You stand that credit card on end, and that's a good measurement. You shouldn't see the top of that credit card. If you do, you're mowing too low. Raise your deck. You don't want to be taking off more than a third of that leaf blade at a time, or you'll really start to stress that lawn. You'll start to get some browning. It'll start to look bad. So keep your turf high, mow high. You're going to have a much healthier stand of turf.
And cut more often. You know, you don't want to be cutting that in half or even more than that. You just take that third off. Now, you referenced this before, but talk about the importance of a sharp blade. And how often do you do that? Once a year do you sharpen a blade?
I like to do mine a couple times a year. So what I do is, you know, before I get started, like today I plan on pulling the tractor in, you know, changing the oil, sharpening the mower blades if they don't need to be replaced. This time of year in the early spring, you oftentimes have a lot of stuff in the lawn. You know, sticks fall from trees and you got a lot of debris. So after a few mows, you know, your blades can easily get dinged up pretty quick. So I'll sharpen again once all that stuff's kind of out of the yard and cleaned up. And then I can go, you know, I let it go until kind of like later in the year. But, you know, your blades, you want to cut the leaf. You don't want it to repeatedly hit it and just kind of shred it, because that'll give that hazing or that discoloration in the top of the leaf blade. You should be able to get down on the ground, look at your leaves and see like a nice cut. Like imagine if you would cut it with scissors versus just tearing it.
So somebody like me, I just take my blade to the hardware store. Are you actually sharpening it yourself? You know how to do that?
Yeah, you can do it with, if they're not bad, they're not real beat up, you know, just the standard file works fine. If you need to take more material off, you can use a bench grinder. There's a lot of different options as far as, you know, sharpening. Most of the time, people don't sharpen enough, and their blades are, you know, pretty beat up to the point where they probably need replaced versus sharpened. But once you start the process of getting into the habit and sharpening your blades, you'd be really surprised at how simple that is. It may sound intimidating, but it is very simple.
I'm taking it to the hardware store, but
yeah, I don't blame you.
Actually, you know what? When you come over for the show, maybe we'll do a little segment on that, and show people how it's done, and then you can teach me how to do it, and then I'll have a sharp blade. So that's a good thing about doing this TV show. I get all my garden work done, and I get an expert like you to show me everything. Now let's talk a little bit about fertilization. When does that begin, and how often should we be doing that on our lawns?
We started that, you know, just recently here. The how often it should be done sometimes can be dictated on what type of grass you have. So assume you have, you know, a standard mix of, you know, bluegrass, ryegrass, fescues. Every 4 to 6 week mark is kind of, you know, how often we do that. But with the fertilization, different times of year, you're putting different amounts down. So your grass, if you imagine, you know, when you have to mow it the most in the spring and in the fall, that's when the grass can really go through the fertilization, uses up a lot of it, but it's the strongest and easiest to take care of. In that lull of summer, when it's not growing as much, you still need a fertilization, needs to be a slow release, but the grass isn't as strong. So making sure when you're doing your fertilization applications before the heart of the summer, making sure that's a very important time to get your turf healthy. And then coming out of summer is more of like a recovery time period, and getting that fertilization on to let it, you know, kind of heal over all the stress that it took in the summer.
All right, Luke, hang in there. We're going to take a break. We'll bring you back after that. For more information about Davey Tree or to ask what's going on with your trees, go to davey.com/KDKA. And remember, you can always call the experts like Luke from Davey Tree at 855-982-TREE. That's 855-982-8733. When we come back, Dorian, hang in there. We'll get to your question. We've got a question from Rob. And if you've got lawn questions, give us a call, 866-391-1020.
Back with more in a moment. Did you know the convectionary oven eventually went on to become the air fryer in 2005? I just thought you might want to know that because we're going to be talking about air fryer recipes coming up next hour on the Coons Cooking Hour.
That's good because we just got an air fryer, a gift from my son's girlfriend, and we've been using it, but we don't really know all the ins and outs of it. So that's good news.
We're going to be talking about it. So listen, right now I want to get this question that was sent to me, Instant Access, great question. From a listener who said, hey, Doug, have you had success with daffodils, late and mid-season daffodils?
Definitely. You know, the advantage of late and mid-season is that you don't get that bud blast that you do from some of the early ones. Some of the early ones can come up, put buds on, and then freeze out. You don't see them bloom that year. You got to wait for the next year. And my favorite two late-season varieties, the first is called Sir Winston Churchill. And if you're going to name something Sir Winston Churchill, it's got to be great, and it is great. And all you really need to know about it, it's got multi-flowers. That's the funny thing, too. You know, with all my daffodils that are blooming, I've been taking them everywhere. You know, I love to pick them. And remember, pick. Don't cut. You just pull from the bottom. They'll last longer in the vase. But taking them around and showing people these daffodils that have more than one flower on a stem, and they're smaller. Well, Sir Winston Churchill, they smell like gardenias. They're just so awesome. And the other one is called Twin Sisters, which is, again, it's a variety I learned about from Joe Ham's daffodil garden down in Washington County. That's free to see, as I said earlier in the show. Go down there and see that. We are joined by Luke Warner here, but I've got one more question I want to get to before we go on with Luke and talk about lawns and trees. And thanks for hanging in there, Dorian. Let's talk to them.
All right. Hey, Dorian, you're on KDKA. Good morning.
Mr. Doug Oster, I'm going to be in Pittsburgh this year, and I want to have a tomato garden, and I was hoping to get some seeds from you.
Oh, no problem at all. Actually, just go to my website, DougOster.com. Go to the
Excuse me, Doug, I have just a cell phone. I'm not on the internet.
Okay. If you just can send me a self-addressed stamped envelope to Doug Oster, Post Office Box 11013, Pittsburgh, PA 15237. I can send you some seeds that way. Or, you know, I'm trying to think how else we can connect if you don't have internet access.
Well, I have a mailing address here in Pittsburgh.
I'll tell you what we'll do. I'll put you on hold. Ryan, do me a favor. Get Dorian's address, and then we'll give it to Doug.
And I'll send him some seeds. We've got some good Pittsburgh tomatoes that I can send you, and we'll get you set up. Good. That's a great way to do it, Rob. Thanks.
All right.
So, all right, Luke, we're talking about lawns, but I also want to talk a little bit about trees. And what does a mild winter like this mean to you? Anything, or we just have to wait to see how it plays out?
Yeah, a lot of the trees have gone into flower and might be putting out their leaves a little bit earlier than usual. So it could be, you know, somewhat exposed and susceptible to some early frost or late frost. But other than that, you know, a little bit of confusion on the trees part end. But it seems like we've had this more often than not over the last few years.
Anything on the forefront as far as pests or diseases that worry you? Or, again, is it just something that plays out as it happens?
A little bit of both. I'm kind of anxious to see how, you know, the spotted lanternfly does this year with Pittsburgh. There's, you know, different areas we saw it more than others, but just kind of curious as to how that will come back. Hemlock woolly adelgid is another one that can kind of stay active through the winter, especially mild winters. So it may be a big year for some invasive pests, unfortunately, but we're always, you know, able and willing to do our part to help the trees.
Well, I can tell you right now, hemlock woolly adelgid is going to be bad because it is bad already at my place. You know how many hemlocks I have. And I was actually walking out yesterday to the truck, and there's, you know, a hemlock that kind of weeps down close to the top. And I looked at it, it was just covered with hemlock woolly adelgid, which whatever I can reach, I cover with horticultural oil I spray on them. But if you've got a 40-foot tall tree like I do, you can't reach all that. Talk a little bit about hemlock woolly adelgid, what it is, and how to get rid of it.
Yeah, so hemlock woolly adelgid is a pest, invasive pest that came from Central Asia, but it attacks hemlock trees. Obviously, it's in its name, but feeds on the stem of the needles, or where the needles attach to the twigs of the tree, pulls nutrients off of that. So that pest can stay active throughout the winter, so it can be pretty detrimental and very strong this time of year as the tree starts putting on its growth. But with that, it's pretty exposed, unlike a lot of other insects that might have a shell or exoskeleton, something like that. So it, like you said, if you can get to them and they're within reach, you can get a horticultural oil on that. It controls it very well. For larger trees that it's not possible to cover with an oil, systemic options sometimes are the best approach and give you the longest residual.
All right, Luke, thanks so much for coming on. We'll see you when we're doing the TV show. He'll be back to talk a little bit more in our Talking Trees segment as we go on through the season. For more information about Davy Tree or to ask what's going on with your trees, go to davy.com/KDKA. And remember, you can always call the experts from Davy Tree at 855-982-TREE. That's 855-982-8733. Hey, check out DougOster.com. I've got lots of information about my upcoming trips to Iceland and the National Parks of America. Both of them have some seats available, but they're going quick. Information next Sunday, 1 o'clock, my first of three free gardening series, and I'll be answering questions after the show at DougOster.com. Remember, organic gardeners, you make our world brighter and safer with each seed you sow and every garden you grow.
All right, Doug, thanks. There he goes. Stay tuned. News at 8, then your air fryer recipes and an added twist to the show as we move forward. If you need some help with your recipes, Frank will handle that too. The Coons Cooking Hour, minutes away on KDKA with your Pratt Pack.